Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
From the Fifth Quarter Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, you're listening to Coach Unplugged. And now, your host, Steve Collins.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Coach Unplugged. So excited you decided to join us today. Before we jump in and talk about the topic today, I'll get it out. I'm leaving that in. I'd like to give a big shout out to our two sponsors. First of all, Dr. Dish, the number one shoe machine on the market, bar none. They are awesome. They rock. Mention Coach Unplugged. They'll give you $350 off. Also, go over and check out teachhoops.com for coaches who want to get better. We have a special, quote unquote, special going on right now where we're giving quarterly memberships. We're super excited about that. People seem excited about it. And then that maybe come in and join for 3 months and take a couple months off. I personally would never leave teachhoops.com, but you have that option. And it's great. So go over and check it out, teachhoops.com for coaches who want to get better. Let's head off to the podcast.
There's kids that, like you said, you got to ride a little bit. There's kids that you got to put an arm around. The big thing for me was you know, trying to make myself more available so that if they wanted to talk about what was going on outside of basketball.
Right.
You know, you'll always have those conversations and hear bits and pieces, but it was actually listening as opposed to making yourself available. So they understood that I had an honest, that I was honestly engaged in what they were telling me. And I would remember it and I would ask the question next time I saw it, how did this go for you? Was everything all right around this? Or, you know, is your mom feeling better? Whatever it might be. So,
right.
And then going on. So, I guess the things that didn't work, you know, where it was, I spoke earlier a little bit about shoehorning. So, you know, just trying to fit players into my philosophy rather than adapt my philosophy around to what I have. So, and then, like I said, that total positivity, which is an ongoing thing and it's going to be one I'm going to have to work on more and more. But, I do think I've upped my game over the last couple of years, even in the
game. And how do you do that? You as an individual?
Yeah, well, I'm lucky enough. The last couple of years, I've had an assistant coach. She's a very experienced coach, but you know, she's a senior lecturer here at the university. But she's her daughters are actually the girls that were playing, and that's why she didn't want to be a head coach. And
okay,
but she wanted to be there for them. But at the same time, you know, she was probably one of the reasons that I moved up here to Belfast originally.
Right.
One of only a couple of female coaches that were coaching men's Super League at the time.
Okay.
And she's an ex-Irish international and an ex-Irish. She represented Ireland in athletics as well. So I've an awful lot of respect for her. And she was great at, you know, kind of helping me understand that, you know what, because she's a lecturer, she's a teacher, you know, she's 25 years, maybe 30 years doing that now.
Right.
She understands that, you know, you just need to be able to tweak and change how you do it. So she'd always make the point that, you know, Patrick is different to how I would coach. You know, he's much nicer than about these sort of things than I would be. So it's just about finding that balance. So that was part of it.
I have found a way to kind of deal with those. What I didn't do is journaling.
And it basically it's self-reflection. You know, I usually take a couple minutes a day and do that. And that seems to help. It makes me go like, ooh, I got to try to do this tomorrow. And it's just, you can do the same thing by just, you know, self-talking and going for a walk. But sometimes I think that the journaling part, that's what I have found to be useful. I don't remember who told me to do that. I'm sure some mentor along the way said, you should journal, Steve. And it seems to be working, but it's hard. It's got to be part of your routine for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is something I did look at, but the issue for me was around routine. It was making it part of my routine. So
yeah.
I got to the stage of now making those phone calls. So I'll sit in the car coming home from work and I'll ring one of the guys and we'll talk about what happened, you know? And I guess that kind of fills that same input for me. It's that opportunity to talk things through, bounce it off. It's kind of been a big thing, and that's part of my growth. We were talking about quotes, you know, and I know you said you want a quote for the end, and this is a particularly active thing about Kobe, but the big thing for me here isn't about, you know, winning the games, and that's the part that I probably tweak when we speak about it at the start of the season and we do our goal setting sessions and we're looking at what we want to get out of it. It's about, you know, here he is, one of the best players who's ever played the game, and it's the different parts that he looks at and recognizes that are integral for a team to move forward. So, and I just thought it was a great quote, and it's one that I do use quite a bit when we start talking at the start of the season with the girls, particularly when I was working with the junior and underage teams.
Do you want to read it off and then kind of explain why you picked it a little bit so people
are listening? So the quote is, I'll do whatever it takes to win games, whether it's sitting on a bench, holding a towel, handing a cup of water to a teammate, or hitting a game-winning shot. So, you know, for me, it was, you know, encompassing that bench player role. It was understanding that you needed to be there for your teammate as a supportive. And then, you know, taking ownership when you needed to and stepping up and taking that leadership and being that person who could hit that game-winning shot, you know, put that time and effort into it. And then it leads you into talking. And, you know, a lot more people now, particularly younger people, have a better understanding of who Kobe Bryant is, unfortunately, because he's passed away and there's been so much about him in the media.
Right.
But for a lot of the younger ones, they might have only just seen a little bit of his tail end of his career and not had a full understanding of who this guy was and his work ethic. And I think, you know, that's the big thing for me is it leads into, he's probably the prime example of work ethic. You know, he was that guy who was there at 4 o'clock in the morning getting shots up. And then moving forward and not afraid to do what he needed to do to up his game.
Right.
It's very sad that he's gone from us this year, but he has provided some real inspiration. And then, you know, there was two other things that kind of... So Pat Riley, who I like quite a lot, and I've read some of his stuff, and he says, you know, excellence is the gradual result of always striving to do better. And for me, you know, it's never an easy flip a switch and suddenly we're great. It's about the process, not the outcome. And that's probably the thing I say nearly every training session. And it's what we talk about in our game plans. And after we've done a scout report coming into the weekend, you know, this is what we want to do. If we do this, then we're going to be fine. But if we don't do this, then we're going to struggle. So I'm not worried about winning the game. I'm worried about us, you know, doing these three things. And if we do these three things to the level that we can, then we're going to win the game. And then the other one, which, you know, which I would say a lot, probably more recently in the last 2 years after I probably spent a bit of time, is challenge is not a threat. So if I'm challenging you to be better, if I'm challenging you to take that next step, you know, it's not a threat. Take it as that red flag to a bull. I want to get better. I want to push through this. I want to come out the other side. So,
right.
And then, you know, I just threw the other one in because I'm a firm believer in the 10 things that require zero talent. And this is one of the things that when we talk at the start of the season and I ask players to put up their, you know, their charter for how the season is going to be and how their behavior is going to be. If these 10 things aren't up there, then this gets shown pretty quickly.
Yeah. So read the 10 things and then I have a question on the 10 things for you.
Yeah. Okay. So being on time, your work ethic, your effort, your body language, your energy, your attitude, your passion, being coachable, doing extra and being prepared.
So let's say you could only pick three of those. What three would you pick?
It would have to be, for me, it would be effort, attitude, and doing extra.
Yeah. Okay. Those are great. Yeah. The list is so good that I think if you pick three, you're going to be good. Yeah. Being on time is one of mine, but that would not be in my top three, but it's literally one of my pet peeves.
Yeah.
And the kids don't understand why. And I go, it's not about Coach Collins being a jerk about being on time. It's not about that. It's about all the things that go with being on time. You know, it's showing energy. It's showing the right attitude. It's being coachable. It's doing the extra thing. It's literally doing all those other things, you know, respecting your teammates' time, all those things, you know. Yeah. So it's like, I always have to explain that one, especially for teenage boys. It's like, they don't never know why I'm such a stickler on being on time. And it's like, well, here's why. You know,
you're on time, you're late.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's Lambeau time. Did you ever know that the clock in Green Bay for the Green Bay Packers is 10? Curly Lambeau, who coached it, was the first coach. The clock's wrong. It's 15 minutes. So I always say Lambeau time. We were in Lambeau time, which means you're 15 minutes early. So if I say 7, you're there at 6:45. We do everything on Lambeau time. But yeah. I love that.
All right. Before I get on to this, talking about the three pillars, I want to jump off the screen, if that's okay.
Okay, yep.
Talk a little bit about the periodization. So,
Coach is really tech savvy. Sometimes I have to walk people through this, so I really appreciate this, Coach.
No problems at all. Okay, so one of the things, you know, I was talking there about upskilling and getting better and challenging myself and looking kind of at the organizational side of things. So I did a lot of research into, you know, what successful teams were like and when they started planning, and bearing in mind that I'm operating in an amateur sport where we don't have any paid professionals.
Right.
I had to kind of look at it and see what can I utilize around me, and then kind of work out agreements with different departments in the university and different development officers and other coaches and strength and conditioners and that side of things. So so I kind of came up with this, which suits our particular season. So our season, you know, starts in the end of September, start of October, and goes through until April normally. So this was from a couple of seasons ago. And we just kind of look at the different phases of the season. And then if you look down the left-hand side, we talk a little bit about what competition. So for us, there's preseason league, and then we have a national cup competition, which is very important, which is run during the season. Then we look at the different phases. So in relation to how it fits into the overall season, what physical activity. So that's really around strength and conditioning. The mental side of things, so sports psychology, you know, what are the different things that I like to really focus on. So there's elements of that I'll do the whole time, but then there's particular areas I like to remind myself to focus on. The technical side, so, you know, when we get on court, what we're working on, so our activation of fundamental skills or base skills, and then we start to consolidate those skills in game scenarios, and then we move on to, when I talk about advanced skills, it's more about the tweaks that we have to make, because we're playing teams we've already played. So it's those in-game adjustments or you know, and different things we're looking at. And, you know, we brought in where we do 4 weeks testing. So we put the guys through testing scenarios so that we can monitor how they're doing. We've been very lucky from an injury point of view doing this, and the way I kind of structure my warm-ups, and we have our systems going, that we haven't had much until this year.
Right.
So this year I lost three girls in the last week of my season. And it was really, really tough. One girl did her ankle, and then one at a game on the weekend, and then the following Tuesday when we were training, another girl, my backup point guard, she did her ankle, and I was left with one guard going into, you know, a playoff situation, and she did her ACL 7 minutes into the first quarter.
So let's go. The ACL thing, you can't really do anything. There's some things you can do, the strength in other parts of their body about the ACLs, but girls tend to do their ACLs more. Studies have been done just because of the hips and the birthing connect, all sorts of stuff. Anyway, but there are ways that you can differentiate that. The other two twisted their ankles. So do they wear ankle braces?
They didn't, neither of them. And neither of them had ankle problems before.
Okay.
I've been blessed for the past 2 years. I've only had one girl, and she plays Gaelic football. And so all her injuries have come through Gaelic football. So
I'll send you some studies that have been done on ankle braces. Ankle braces are like airbags in cars. They basically just slow the twist. no one plays Division I men's basketball in the States without being taped or wearing braces. No one. No one. Zero. Like,
we would have no issue with getting taped over here, but a lot of our medical knowledge is saying that you become too reliant with the ankle brace.
Yep. And I'd love to see the studies on that. I'd love to see the studies on that, because I don't think this is the statistician in me. The studies show that it doesn't weaken the ankles. It actually, what it does is it makes a twist, not 5 weeks or 6 weeks. It makes it like a week and a half. So, you know, you're not going through the windshield and in the hospital for 6 months in a car accident. No. That's why you have the seatbelt on. You bang your head and get a concussion, you're out for a week, you know, that kind of thing. I'm telling you, I preach it, and it's like old school thing, but I'll send you the research on it. It's the braces are actually almost better in some respects, because you can retighten them.
Yeah.
If you have like a little twist during practice and you got to walk it off, you know, those little ones that sometimes happen, then they can take their shoe off and they can retighten. A tape job actually loosens a little bit. And it's easier to just slip the braces on, lace them back up, and tighten them. But anyway, it's not an easy sell. Trust me.
No, and a big part of us is our girls are looked after through the university. So our physiotherapy department at the university and that side of things. So I'm really lucky that I have that resource here at the university. So a lot of the other clubs don't, and they might have to reach out and pay, or, you know, they might get some young physiotherapists who are coming in and just starting their working life, and they're looking to do something for
living. Is that a big major for some of the kids?
It is, yeah, because it we're such a sporting nation, and it's all different types of sports that there's a lot of work out there on it. So,
I bet there is. Yeah, all right, I'm off my soapbox now. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Ankle braces.
So I found this. I do it every year, and you know, it just reminds me at the different stages of the season. I actually have reminders put into my calendar for the different weeks, to come back and check on this and see where we're at.
It's great. It's great. I have one of these too, so both of us will share ours. Kind of. I think young coaches don't map this kind of stuff out sometimes, and I love how you broke it up into player. You know, you broke it up into different levels. I love that with colors.
Yeah, so we're working on it. Yeah.
Yeah. So
that was one. And then the other one that was really big for my game coaching was the different sets that we play. So in our conference, depending on how the season goes, the number of teams playing, but this particular year, we were playing in conference. So we'd play home or away against the teams in conference. And then we'd play either home or away against the teams out of conference. So there's two conferences, North and South.
Right.
So for this was reminding me what we had done and played against certain teams. And then what I was keeping, you know, in the back pocket, or when I needed to start, you know, incorporating this into our training sessions. So across the top is the weeks, and then also the teams that we were playing. And then down the left-hand side were our defensive sets, offensive sets, our baseline out of bounds, and our sideline out of bounds. So, and this was just up until Christmas. So this was just to remind me the main things, you know. So like we play a lot of man-to-man. I don't play a lot of zone. I go to it every now and then to change things up, but predominantly I play a lot of man.
Right.
And then it was just, you know, the different types of presses that we'll put on.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
And then looking at our offensive sets, it was, you know, our motion. We had two or three different types of motion sets that we would always go into.
How long do you give them off during winter break?
Say that again, sorry.
How long do they get off during Christmas break?
Oh, so it, for the men, it was a week. For the girls, it was two.
Okay.
So then we might play our last game on the 15th of December, and then we had two games on the 4th and 5th of January. So
do the U.S. girls go home?
Sometimes yes. Sometimes they just go to Europe and spend a few days in Europe, and family comes over to meet them.
That'd be good.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. What I've found is we don't actually, I don't like them to go for too long, because it's difficult for them to train when they're at home. They're in a bit of a, you know, catch-up mode with all their friends and family. And then when they're back to me, I got to work them really hard for a week. And normally I get them for like two training sessions before games that following
weekend. Right. Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, so there's a bit of that. Some clubs don't let their Americans go home at all. They say you got to stay, you know, you're working Christmas camps or whatever the case might be. And
right.
Job for the year, so suck it up.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, so and yeah, we're slightly different. There is that little bit of leeway, you know, to be decided and worked out with the students. But a lot of the times they'll come to me and say, look, you know, I'd like to take 4 days here and go, and it's fine because we don't have training because the university's closed.
Right.
And then they're back and they're saying, you know, I'm going to take 1 day. So they might end up missing one training session that I have scheduled. But again, this is just something that I found helpful to remember what I did against certain teams and then what I was keeping in the locker as we got to move right. on.
So it's the stuff you're explaining is actually like pre-practice planning. Like you're mapping out the year and then you're mapping out what you're going to need in for specific things. So I'm guessing when you're doing your practice plan, at least you have this one by you, kind of.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it guides me. So, and the certain I'll tweak and change. So if we play a team, you know, our first game of the league and after we've played them, because we won't have been able to scout them coming up to that really, unless we were lucky enough to see them in a preseason tournament.
Right.
So then after that game, we'll break it down and we'll decide, all right, actually, you know what, next time when we play them, we're going to do this, this, and this, because they're really not going to have issues with it. Or we're going to change our defense this way because of what they're looking to rely on. So,
okay.
It's a working document. It's for me, you know, I put it out there and I'll have an idea based on who was coming back from the other teams that I can find out. And then we tweak and change it as we kind of go. But normally by October, I have it pretty much locked in because by then I have seen all the other teams in the league, watched their game tape, even if we haven't played. And then, because I know you love session plans. So
I do.
Is a typical session plan.
He calls them session plans. I love that. Yes.
Yeah. So
lesson plan. Yep.
Yeah, exactly. So, or practice plan, whatever you want to go with.
Yep.
So for me, this is one that we did last year in September. So the goals for the training were to continue embedding our key principles through gameplay. And this particular stage of the season, you know, we did a lot. I do a lot of stuff with ball in hand. There's probably one drill in there where there's no defense or they're not having to react and make a decision. So, and that's the very first drill that we do. I call it Liberty. It's one when you have two lines under the basket and you're literally catching, finishing high, and you just work in an almost circular motion, joining one line after you shoot and going on to the next one. So, and we work and just shoot at the basket, at the block and at the elbow, and then from the free throw line. It takes about 4 minutes. We work as a team to a goal. We call it out. It's a good one to start our communication and get going. And you know, there's a few catchphrases that we put in there, and just to remind the girls, catch high, finish high, particularly when they're close to the basket. You know, don't bring the ball down. You know, give yourself that opportunity to get the shot off quickly. We will then do closeouts, but we'll do them where we're until we do our ramp, which is our exercise warm up. I don't allow contact. So I won't let them go one-on-one. I won't let them do any of that sort of stuff.
Okay.
Because, you know, that was the research that I did a few years ago with the national team and the advice that I got from the experts we were dealing with. And, you know, we've been lucky enough that, until this year, we've had no injuries.
Right.
None to speak of. Part of it, I think, is this. Then we'll do our ramp, and that's just, it is moving, stretching. I can't even think of words. Not static stretching, dynamic stretching. There we go.
Dynamic stretching. There you go. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Stretching exercises. Yeah. So and it's a set one that we do. And the last minute is if there's anything specific the girls want to work on. So
okay.
I'm of the opinion that, you know, it's just purely about activation. So it's just about to activate those muscles for certain things. So like they'll jump, they'll skip. They'll come down off 2 feet, they'll, you know, change a direction. So that's all incorporated into that. And it just takes a couple of minutes to do, but it just gets them ready to go. Then we'll go back into our close-out play, but we'll end up playing 3-man or 4-man. But now we'll focus on one of the things that we do. We play a lot of ball screen offense.
Okay. And
face a lot of ball screen offense. So big focus in my sessions are around how we deal with.
You run a ball screen offense. Do you spend a lot of time defensively on how to deal with ball screens? And do you see a lot of ball screens in your league?
Yeah, we do. Not as much this year from the top team.
Okay.
They were mostly of guards, and they just, you know, they ran a lot of motion stuff without to a ball screen, but a lot of the other teams which who had post players ran ball screen stuff. So so we would focus on, you know, what I call jamming, so where we jam under, you know, particularly if they're not great shooters, so we'll identify in our scout and go under.
Do you have a glossary of like, so you're talking about jam, we talk about I mean, everyone's got a little bit of different terminology. Does the national organization have terminology, or do you have terminology within your club that you use?
Yeah, so I have my own terminology. It is pretty similar to what would be used here by a lot of the coaches.
Okay.
So for us, you know, it's there's jam, there's switch, there's hedge, we go soft hedge or hard hedge, depending on how far you want to push them. We'll ice, which I think is pretty much the same as what you would understand icing to be, where we'll come off the screener and try and isolate the ball handler, force them into staying on the side. And then the one that I brought in this year is one that I've kind of seen some of the EuroLeague teams use, and it's called tagging. And that's where we'll run a weak side guard or post in to take the rolling screener.
Okay.
We'll run our guard who was guarding up high, will sprint to cover the corner. So it's anytime we're in a strong side corner situation, we work three man off.
You use a lot of that terminology. I mean, I think that's the key, is as long as you're using consistent terminology.
Yeah. Like
when we switch, we talk about talk, touch, take. Talk, touch, take, you know. You know, you're going to talk through it, you're going to touch the guy, and then you're going to take him. You know, those little things that, as long as you got determined, like you could ask an eighth grader that would coming to me, they know what talk, touch, take is. But it's terminology. It's all that stuff. I think that glossary is super important, but it sounds like you do that. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Keep going. I love this.
That's it. So, you know, that's normally about 20 minutes.
Okay.
Water break. And free throws. So there are certain times on training sessions when I'll do specific free throw shooting and put pressure on players. But a lot of times we just want to get reps up and get them so that in a week they'll shoot, you know, somewhere between 70 and 80 free throws.
Okay.
Just as part of their session when they're in and doing it. And we as a team shot 77% last year. And
ooh, that's good.
There was nobody within 9% of us. It's been that way for the last 2 years.
You can win games by shooting free throws, trust me.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. and then the other thing around that is it's time for the girls to talk and do a little bit of peer coaching. So the things that I bring in around that, kind of, I've WB written there, which is water break. So then you got to go shoot free throws, and then they'll have a talk about thing. And at the start of the session, I didn't say this actually, but at the very start, what we'll do is we'll talk about, right, what are the goals for the session today? So these are the four things that we want to come out of it.
So do you meet them do you have a pre-practice? Do you meet them before you go to the court? How does that work?
Yeah, so about 5 minutes before we can get onto the court, because court time is limited. So we have our slot between, you know, 8 and 10. So I'll meet the girls outside the door to the court, and we'll talk briefly just about, right, this is what we're focused on for tonight. This is what we're looking at. And then they'll already have started to lace up their boots and stuff while they're outside, so that when we get in, we can hit the ground pretty running.
How do you feel about your transition between drills?
It works, because what I try and do is I do it in segments. So
okay.
The biggest thing for me is I used to get caught trying to explain it there and then, and I could be 10 or 15 minutes going through it over and over again, and then I come back the next session and think, yeah, you know what, they're going to know it. We spent 4 minutes on just this alone, and, you know, they're making the same mistake. So now what I try and do is I synopsize down to like the three key words or whatever it might be for each of those, or the actions that we're looking to do, and then from that, what we'll do then is we'll just break it down. So we'll go into it. Here we are. We're only going to spend 4 minutes on it, or reach this goal, and this is it. And if you've got a question, we'll talk about it during our water break reflection time.
Okay.
So that's 2 or 3 minutes in the segment. I try not to interrupt in between unless something has gone really badly wrong. Or I haven't explained something right, and we're just not picking up on it. So this particular session, then we try and do an individual skill development part, but it's always one-on-one. So, you know, for here, we just talked about post and wing series. So we just worked on finishes, catching finishes, looking on, focusing on our footwork, feeding the D. we have three different types of finishes that, you know, I would try and emphasize depending on whether we catch on the block, below the block, or above the block. And then we'll do a little bit on ball screen reads where we work in pairs. So we'll have two coming up and we'll just work either top of the key, so like a horn situation, or we'll work side ball screen. And okay. We'll just talk about our different reads and what we're going to do out of it. So that feeds into a lot of what we do when we're in our 3v3, 4v4 as we start to build up. So then this particular session, we did a lot on rebounding. You know, rebounding, I think, is... I always say it's the fifth skill in basketball. And, you know, if you actually talk about teams, how much time they spend doing rebounding, yeah, it's as frustrating as how much time they spend doing free throws.
Yeah. Have you been watching Last Dance with Michael Jordan?
I don't have Netflix, so I'm saving it up. And what I'll do is I'll get somebody's account and then binge on the 10 episodes.
10 episodes. Okay. So the last one last week was on Rodman. And you know, everyone knows he's probably one of the best rebounders ever. But what I found intriguing, and he said this in The Last Dance, and it pertains to what you're talking about in rebounding, he would have friends go to the gym when he was in the NBA and just shoot for hours, and he would just rebound their shots. Like, because he wanted...
standing on the flight of the ball.
He wanted to know the flight of the ball. And when you watch it, it will be crazy. He'll say, well, here's how Larry Bird's shot went. And he knew that it had a lot of spin, so the way it would go because he had seen so much of it. Or this shot, da da da. And it was like, he was like, that. He knew that's how he was going to play and be on the court and be Dennis Rodman. But it was just intriguing that he picked that one skill and he became an artisan of that skill. Like, I'm going to just learn how the ball is going to bounce when it hits the rim every time. Yeah. So it's very intriguing. So when you watch it, you'll see what I'm talking about, but anybody that's watched it will know what I'm talking about. But that's a nuance that I don't think people, I mean, he spent hours, like Michael Jordan's probably spent hours on his floater. You know, he spent it on reading the ball on a missed shot. It's crazy. Anyway, go ahead. Yeah. People don't spend time on rebounds at all.
No, and like, you know, percentage wise, it's all about that second possession game for teams and denying it to the other team and trying to cut down the possessions. And then the other thing for me really is trying to work the percentages of where shots are likely to go.
Right.
So you know, a lot of teams will shoot threes, you know, so like sometimes some of the teams up to a third of their shots will be threes. So it's understanding, all right, where if it's a corner three, where's the most likely place that it's going to go for the rebound. So we'll talk about that a lot. There's one drill in particular there, which I didn't actually do up for you, but I will, okay. But I can explain it pretty easily. We'll have four players outside, two in the corner, two in the wings, sometimes five, but normally four. And then we'll work, four defensive players, one in each block and one in each elbow. And those four players, defensively will start to circle around. But as they're doing that, they're pointing at the player offensively they're closest to and calling it out. So their team knows, I have the ball, or coach has the ball, or, you know, one of the players has the ball, and then on my shout, they'll shoot, or I'll shoot, and then the players have to go box out, and then it's a defensive versus offensive to try and regain possession of it. It was actually one that I saw Lynn Mulligan, the Ryder Division One women's coach, do, and actually one of her girls came to us this past year. She was our point guard. But I had seen her, she'd come over and done a clinic a couple of years ago, and this was one of the drills she demonstrated in her clinic, and I just thought it was really good because it focuses on movement, having to adjust, communication, letting your team know, and then starting to understand that, you know, when players crash from the corner, when players crash from the wing, or players crash from the top, you know, there's different things that you have to do, and we start breaking down a little bit then about, you know, how do you T-bar them? You know, do you need to go all the way out to them? Do you meet them? You know, what you're trying to do is force change of direction, force them to stop and move, that kind of thing. So,
okay.
Yeah, it's a real good one. I found that the girls embrace it quite a lot, and we had a lot of, you know, even offensively, the girls are learning how to read defenders trying to box them out, and it just gives them that opportunity.
And I've said this on podcasts before, but an offensive rebound is a selfish thing. Like, I tell my guys, if you get an offensive rebound, then that's your ball at that point, because we're getting an extra shot. I go, you don't have to pass it back out. If you have a shot, I mean, that's yours. Like, you just went and earned that. Go, you can do it. I mean, so, yeah, there's a nuance to that, too.
There is.
Yeah.
When we're shooting well, I'd say, you know, your first option is go back up. Your second option is kick it out. And if you're open, you can let it go. Because you know what? We've just got one offensive rebound. we're in a good spot.
We're we're at a plus, like the plus minus system. We're at a plus at this point because we're getting two shots.
Hey, everybody. Hope you enjoyed that. If you want to hear more of these, go over and join ttubes.com. 14-day free trial allows us to do this, and then subscribe, like, jump up and down, do whatever you got to do. Tell us what you want to hear in the future, steve@ttubes.com. All right, have a great day.
Sports Social Podcast Network.